Let me tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a special pre-holiday edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Happy Easter, happy Passover, and appropriately, we're going to visit with Dr. Lisa Solcenti, who is going to tell us a little bit about the perils inherent in this holiday, what's concealed in those chocolate Easter bunnies and in those suspiciously colored pink and yellow peeps. I never did like peeps, but some kids like them. And we'll also discuss practical strategies for getting your kids, your family, on healthier fare. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Solcenti, known to her patients and her web followers as simply Dr. Lisa, she's a chiropractor, she's a nutritionist, she's an author, and she is a self-proclaimed crusader for families with autism spectrum disorders. She has intimate familiarity with some of the issues that confront parents with cognitively and sensory challenged kids, and she's worked through them using a natural nutritional approach. So welcome to the program, Dr. Lisa. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, one of your most popular podcasts was one we did last Halloween, because Halloween is a big orgy, a big chowdown on all kinds of candy. And not only did you tell people, give people a 411 on what was concealed in all those candies, but also gave us some ideas for healthier alternatives. And we're not talking carrot sticks either.
No, it was fun.
Those won't work. You will definitely get your house toilet papered if you give your, you know, if you offer people carrot sticks. So, tell us a little bit your personal journey. How did you get there with this type of information?
Well, I am a nutritionist, so I've had that in my background for years. So I've always been about eating healthy and clean. Nutrition's changed, you know, over the years, so I've always kept up on that. But I am also blessed with three sons, and one is on the autism spectrum disorder, which I've learned, you know, going through the whole journey, is that food is so important, and a lot of the ingredients that are in food actually are toxic, and they can harm both the brain barrier and also the gut, and they can create, like, hyperactivity, attention problems. So as you're going through it as a parent, you're realizing that possibly what you're feeding your child, you're making all the symptoms and the behaviors worse. So I had to start cleaning up my own son's diet very, very specifically by reading labels. And so as a nutritionist, I found it fascinating.
Well, you know that this is a very controversial area. And originally we had Dr. Feingold back in, I guess it was the 1970s, talking about this. But then he was received all kinds of ridicule and opposition. And for a long time, this whole notion was poo-pooed that food colorings and dyes and chemicals could affect kids. But recently, it's been resurrected with a series of studies that resoundingly demonstrate that, at least for some kids, these food additives make a difference. You're probably familiar with some of that research. Can you give us a history?
Yeah. What I have found out is that it seems to me it came from possibly over in Europe, and they have been doing a lot of, I guess, studies there, and then, you know, it trickles into here. And like the British Food Standards, back in 2001, they had a study, and what they found were six dyes, and I believe also sodium benzoate linked to the hyperactivity and the ADD in children. So then the European law requiring these six dyes to have warning labels, and I'm not aware of anything that really went on here strongly, but that's where the research started. And even back in 2007, they found that UK food standards were getting very strict, and they were linking artificial dyes to hyperactivity in children. And then it even moved to almost all children. They weren't just saying, hey, it's children with ADD or ADHD. They were saying this is hyperactivity for preschool to middle-aged children. And then they were specifically looking at, like, dye orange B. You know, this is in hot dogs and sausage in Canada. And then they looked at, like, blue 1, red 40, yellow 5 and 6. So they really started investigating a lot of these specific dyes and linking it. So I think that's why we didn't hear about it as much here at first, and it was being done elsewhere, and then it moved over to here. That's my take on it. I don't know if I'm missing some of the research here, but it got quiet here for, like you said, when Feingold was saying things, it just got poo-pooed here, you know?
Right, absolutely. He just received all kinds of ridicule and opposition. And, you know, it turns out, you know, Feingold was an allergist, and originally he developed his diet to treat patients with intractable itching, you know, hives and urticaria. And he found that that diet, you know, the chemicals were an instigator or a trigger, so that nowadays whenever I see a patient who has, you know, severe bodily itch problems, we can try them on the Feingold diet. Often it is helpful. But what he noticed was that with kids who suffered itching, in addition to relieving their itching, there was an improvement in school performance, concentration and focus, and relief of the ADD symptoms. And then he became an evangelist for getting these toxic substances out of the food supply. And there's Feingold societies that sprung up all over the country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, his work is great. Maybe things when they're new get kind of poo-pooed at first. But as I personally just started removing things for my own son, you just saw the behavior, you know, get so much better, and you saw the concentration get better. And then when you learn, as far as you know, as you add certain foods that are high in omegas and, you know, certain superfoods that are just really great for the brain and the attention, it even gets better. So you're learning to take certain things out and put better things in.
And so let's open up the Easter basket and see what lies concealed within. And our Jewish friends and listeners are not exempt from this phenomenon, because some of the Passover treats also may be Trojan horses for substances that can set kids off at the Seder table. You know, that may be why they're not listening.
It's true. Okay, if you look, we use the bunny and the peeps because it was kind of a cute catch, but those peeps come in all different colors now. The jelly beans too, I mean, you know, and the bunny itself too, but a lot of colorful things. And right there you have, you know, the dyes and the artificial coloring. And like I just mentioned, there's a lot of them. I mean, citrus red 2, the red 3s, the red 40s, the yellow 5, the yellow 6, the blue 1, the blue 2, the green 3. And they mix these colors, as you know, to get other colors. So they're very toxic to the nervous system, and they're actually derived from coal tar and petroleum. And they've been linked to, like, cancer. They've been linked to ADD, hyperactivity. So these are definitely something that if you're giving, you know, into these holiday baskets or these holiday treats, it's for me, not a good idea. And we are lucky today that you can actually, if you still want to give a treat like we do at Halloween, you don't want to give out carrots. There's now jelly beans and candies without these dyes in them. So we're very lucky today to be able to have that option.
We'll talk a little bit about those alternatives. But so how can you be a smart consumer? Do you have to have a degree in biochemistry to read these labels? Sometimes things have rather innocuous names. The disclosure is not that clear for consumers.
Well, if you look at peeps, sugar, corn syrup, gelatin, yellow number 5, and that's that tartrazine, which is a very toxic chemical, potassium sorbate, natural flavorings. So those, you kind of have to start learning what those words mean. If you see yellow 5 or any of the reds or the blues, right away you know it's a toxic type of substance. So that's, you know, for dyes, you just look for those colors. You have to start learning some of the words. There's great apps out there. That's what I do with the kids in my office and the patients, is get on some apps. And I think there's Food Educate and Chemical Maze, where you can actually put the word in and it'll tell you, is this a toxic substance?
What are some of the apps that you like to refer your parents to?
Yeah, I think one's called Chemical Maze, and the other one is Food Educate. They're two really good apps that you can put the substance in or the ingredient in if you don't know the word, and it'll tell you like the level of, you know, toxicity that it has, if you should avoid it or not.
Yeah, you mentioned potassium sorbate, and that is one that is in a lot of things. It's in pickles and preserved foods. And what's the deal on that? Is it innocuous for most people? Is it potentially carcinogenic? What's your take on it?
It basically is used as a preservative, like you said, and the purpose is to keep the shelf life of the food longer. And as we said, the most healthiest thing is really to have a food that would go bad in a day or two. So this is basically used to preserve food, and it's known as a toxic to the system, and can create the behaviors that you don't want to see, such as the hyperactivity and intention and things like that.
So is this an effect that would be seen in all kids? Because what plagues these studies is sometimes, you know, when they look at a broad aggregate of kids, they don't see an effect. And, you know, we know that this is a phenomenon in science, is that, you know, some studies will say, well, vitamin D doesn't help, or fish oil doesn't help, or magnesium doesn't help. But then that may be in just a big aggregate of 30,000 nurses or something. But if you look at a subset, say, for example, patients with diabetes, you begin to see effects. Patients who have certain health issues or nutritional vulnerabilities seem to respond better to certain nutrients. Conversely, do you see that at-risk kids who are on the autistic spectrum, whether it's, you know, kids with full-fledged, easily diagnosable autism, or kids, you know, maybe have mild Aspergian, you know, social adaptation or processing issues, that those are the kids who are most thrown off by these toxins?
I definitely see it with the kids on the spectrum, like you said, or the Asperger's or the other, whichever end they're on. I definitely see that these chemicals affect them, you know, I guess in a more intense scenario. And it's just through experience for me, it's just removing them, the kids get better in the sense of behavior or self-regulating the nervous system. So I don't know if they are more susceptible to the toxins, but what I found in a lot of the research, I'm sure you're aware of this, is that a lot of it comes from the gut, and they may have issues in being able to process these toxins as somebody, let's say, that doesn't have autism or Asperger's. So a lot of these things are we call antigens, so they come into the body. The body is recognizing them as like a foreign substance, a toxic type substance. And because this nervous system is having problem regulating, and because the gut might be a weaker gut, the body attacks itself. What it does, so it thinks this foreign toxin needs to be attacked, it creates an inflammatory response. And that research is out there, that they're seeing that a autistic child has a different gut, you know, or a plethora of microbes in the gut versus somebody that is, I guess, a typical child. Mm-hmm. So that answers your question, but there's definitely, I think, more of a correlation between the autistic child or the Asperger's child that responds worse to, I guess, having candy or, you know, things with toxic foods in. So in my office, I'm definitely about cleaning up the gut, cleaning up the diet.
And is there some aspect of the, there's also something referred to as not the gut barrier, but the blood-brain mm-hmm. barrier.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's some disruptions there where people or kids who are healthy have an intact blood-brain barrier, which kind of keeps toxins in the brain to a minimum. But part of the problem in these neurodevelopment disorders is that the blood-brain barrier is more permeable to influences from the gut or from foods.
Yeah, and that's definitely where it goes. As the inflammatory process, you know, starts happening, the body, the immune system responds by trying to fight it, and these things can cross the blood-brain barrier, exactly. But, you know, you also, what people don't realize is these type of toxins in the foods can also be affecting the gut, and then the inflammatory response couldn't, maybe it's not going to be, you know, like an autism problem, but you can have things like autoimmune issues can be related to eating poorly and eating the wrong things. So all different types of people may respond poorly to a dye in a food, let's say.
Okay, so Easter and Passover are right around the corner.
Yeah.
Moms and parents are at the supermarket or hopefully at the health food store. You don't want to be, you know, the Easter basket Nazi. No candy for you. What's a parent to do to discourage the intake of bad stuff? What can you offer as a healthier treat alternative?
Well, you can go, if you want to do candy, you definitely can find today, which I'm just so happy because like 10 years ago, you could find nothing. You can find, I call it toxic free candy, but there are things like Whole Foods has organic jelly beans. And even though you're giving them sugar, you're going to be giving them a non-GMO source sugar, which we can get into the GMO thing, but sure. You're also going to give them the jelly bean without the dyes. That's a better choice. They also have chocolate. They have more organic chocolate bunnies there. Somebody complained it was $12 a chocolate bunny, but, you know, you're getting more of a healthy chocolate
right.
bunny.
At Whole Paycheck, it's $12.
At Whole Paycheck, yes, it's $12. But, again, if we talk about chocolate, it's a healthier form of chocolate. It's a real chocolate. And I know I've listened to your podcast. You talk about the benefits of dark chocolate. It can be a healthier choice than the fake chocolate that's out there. So those are options, is using like Whole Foods or naturalcandystore.com has a lot of organic candies. Amazon.com has a lot of great candies. Surf Sweets is a great brand that I've used with my kids. It's an organic. They have like the gummy worms and the gummy bears, the jelly beans, things like that. Endangered Species chocolate is one chocolate that I love if you're going to do dark chocolate. But if you also don't want to do the whole candy deal, you can pick out, you know, what I do with my kids is, you know, little treats. Spring is happening and summer's happening, so you can get a little basket, you know, sidewalk chalk and little things that your kids like. If the kids are older, you know, Amazon gift card or, you know, a book. I can't even say a CD because I don't think they do CDs anymore, so it might be like an iTunes card. You know, it depends where you're at. Coloring books and things like that, a little basket of fun stuff. I like to get them outdoors, so spring's here, so wiffle balls and
right. So there's an element of behavior mod too, because you know, substituting one for one, you know, a health quote healthy treat versus an unhealthy treat, it still gets kids into the treat mindset. And you know, most of these things, in one way or another, whether they're natural sugars or whether they are artificial sugars, are still sugar laden. And there is indeed, isn't there, an effect of sugar per se on behavior?
Yes. That's the number one thing I think that you did hear in the 80s was sugar increases hyperactivity. You know, sugar increases. You know, there's a joke with grandparents and parents like, "Oh, you give them too much sugar, they're all going to get riled up." You know, so
right.
That definitely exists.
I think that that pretty much we've seen, you know, as parents and grandparents, we've seen that kind of scenario again and again, is that, you know, enough already, because the kids are literally bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, like you go to a school for a school party, they're not too sugary as they used to be, but you can go in there and the kids are like, ah! You know?
Right.
They get a little out of control.
So is that based on the physiologic effect of sugar, that it causes ups and downs of blood sugar, instability in blood sugar, which then affects behavior? What do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I think you're just dumping a lot of sugar into your body, and it's creating that rush of sugar coming in to get all this energy. And then, you know, there's a crash afterwards. So all this glucose going in the blood, and you're getting a response to the body with energy, and then it just, you use it all up, and you crash. So that's definitely there with sugar.
And there's also an element of, you know, if you create this psychological reward system, you know, in childhood, it's like if you're good, you'll get candy, you know, that ultimately this will create an adult who is fixated on candy as a self-reward or, you know, maybe even you could backfire if it's like, get really ambivalent about sugar, if it becomes a forbidden fruit. You can also create problems with funky attitudes about eating disorders, ambivalence, you know, where when you're good, you're very, very good, and when you're bad, you're very, very bad.
Yeah, that's true. And I do food therapy in my office, which is I work with kids on the spectrum. They're called picky eaters, and the moms and dads bring the kid in, and they usually only eat a few things, but a lot of them, if it is sugar, it's candy or it's a sugary cereal, like something that's just junk. And so they like that sweet taste. And what I try to tell the parents is, you know, fruit is natural. It's the natural Skittles, you know, like we want them, if they like sweet, that's a good thing. I can bring them over to blueberries and strawberries and bananas and things that are sweet. So they do learn poor behavior. You know, the brain is saying, hey, you know, these Fruit Loops are great. I just want more of these. And that's what, so I have to move them over to the other side of sweetness, which is a natural, really healthy sweet thing, like a blueberry.
The things that are artificially flavored and colored and highly sweetened really jazz the brain way beyond what we're biologically equipped to handle. But ultimately, you know, it's kind of like, how do you keep them down on the farm after they've seen Gay Paris? Once they've crossed that threshold towards taking these artificial foods, it's hard to say, oh, eat an apple. You know, how do you cope with that with, you know, your food counseling?
It's tough. It's tough. But with the kids, so if you're going to go to like something like Fruit Loops, I might move them to an organic cereal that's flavored with, let's say, beet and carrot and grape.
Because color is an important element for kids. Kids often eat according to color. They're very visual.
Yeah.
Especially, frankly, to some of these kids who are on the spectrum, they're very regimented about eating, and the food has to look a certain way. You know, they even have to, like, they line up their green peas on the plate, you know.
They do.
And
they
they're
do.
Very, like, a little obsessive about it.
Yeah. I offer alternatives to the parents. Like I said, like, they like the Fruit Loops, they like the colors, but there's organic ones that use the fruit, natural fruit juices, and it's still colorful, and they taste actually pretty good. And then if we're going to do something like you said where they're only eating a few things, it could take 50 times before they touch it, taste it, smell it, have it on their face, have it on their fingers, like before they even like actually eat it. So I play with it. We smash it. If it's a nice day, we'll go outside and slingshot them. Like just get the kids really, really having fun with food.
You don't say don't play with your food. You tell them play with your food.
Exactly. I tell the parents play with the food, shop with them. You know, if you're mashing up blueberries for the day, let them find the blueberries in the store. You know, let them know with them, go pick them, cook something with blueberries. You know, and if they start liking blueberries, then you go to recipes with it. But we really, really play, and I stress with the parents. For someone who has a sensory problem or a fixation problem or an avoidance, they may have to play with these foods for a while, you know, and they will grow accustomed to it. They have to let the nervous system get used to the smells and the taste and the feel of them. And that it's almost like it's definitely a brain thing. You just have to help them overcome it.
It's also a sensory thing, and kids are different than adults in their taste big time. And I have to say that I've done a 180 in terms of my own food preferences and in terms of my own likes and dislikes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There was a beep on my end. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, little feedback.
Yeah. Oh, no, kids definitely have a different taste than adults. And as you know, I mean, I didn't like, this is funny, personally, I couldn't stand vegetables as a kid. I mean, I was all for hamburgers and french fries. And as I got older, I mean, I can't even eat meat. Like, I try to it. I'm not like, you know, totally against meat, but I really love vegetables and fruit. It's my biggest thing right now and for years. But as a kid, my mom couldn't get them down. Couldn't put them in the plate. I'd look at her like, am I eating that? So your taste develops. It changes as you get older.
So it may be a mistake for parents to say, look, this is what we're feeding you. It's like you got to eat your broccoli or you got to eat your asparagus or you got to eat the kale and collard greens before you get your dessert. For some kids, that really is torture.
Yeah, I teach more of fostering a trust of food, a like for food, a play with food, and then possibly a love. Like, and they don't have to like every single fruit that's out there. If they like three really good things, then I'll let them play with them and love them. Like, I'm not into forcing it down their throats or you can't leave the table till you finish your peas, you know, that type of thinking. I think they have to love it. Like, cook with them. That's another thing. In my office, even five-year-olds, like, we make smoothies, you know, so I can find, if I can get two fruits that they kind of like and they'll play with, we're going to make a smoothie out of it, you know. And they're going to make the smoothie, they're going to press the button, they're going to put the stuff in it, and they're going to give it to mommy. And so let them enjoy food. You know, it has to be a positive experience, and I think somewhere that got lost through generations, I'm not sure, or in society today, it's more like fast foods and eating fast and eating quickly. And, you know, first thing I do is I ask parents is, do they sit at the table with you? Do you guys sit down together? Is this a joyous experience? Or is this just complete struggle for you? And kind of get an idea of, is this fun? Because food, I love food now. I mean, it's healthy and it's great and the colors are awesome. And each color usually means a different, like, you know, nutrient. And just really try to draw a love of food.
Indeed. All right, there's a good point at which to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. When we return, we'll talk a little bit about GMOs. We'll talk a little bit about special dietary considerations and strategies for working with kids who have challenging developmental issues. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoppen. We're talking today to Dr. Lisa Solcenti, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.